hot atmosphere for a month. We must have stood there at the hatch for hours. It wasn't until the next watch showed up and pushed past us that Fuchs looked sternly at me and said, "Get back to your quarters, Humphreys. You too, Marguerite." The ship's motion had smoothed out considerably, although Lucifer was still pitching up and down enough to make my stomach uneasy. "You heard me?" Fuchs snapped. "When I give an order, I want it obeyed. Move!"
"Yes, sir," I said, and led Marguerite down the passageway toward her compartment. She slid her door open, then hesitated. Turning to me, she asked, "How are you feeling?" "Fine," I said. Beyond her, I could see the compartment Fuchs had given her. It was spare, utilitarian, probably the quarters for the first mate who had been killed trying to save Rodriguez. It was next to Fuchs's more luxurious quarters, but there was no connecting door, I saw.
"No problems with the anemia?" she asked.
"We have more immediate problems to worry about," I said. As if to emphasize my point, the deck lurched, throwing her against me. I held her with both arms. She disengaged herself, gently, perhaps even reluctantly, I thought. But she did pull away from me. Yet she seemed genuinely concerned about me.
"We have no way of knowing how long the transfusion will help you."
"Never mind that," I said. "What's he doing to you?" Her back stiffened.
"What do you mean?"
"Fuchs, what's he doing to you?"
"That's not your concern," Marguerite said.
"Isn't it?"
"No, it isn't."
"You're trying to protect me, aren't you?"
"By sleeping with him, you mean?"
"Yes." For an instant I thought I was looking at her mother. Her expression went cold, hard as steel.
"Don't flatter yourself," she said.
I felt anger flaring through me. "Then you're sleeping with him to protect yourself."
"Is that what you think?"
Exasperated, I shot back, "What else can I think?"
Icily, Marguerite said, "I am not responsible for what goes on in your mind, Van. And what is happening between Captain Fuchs and me is our business, not yours."
"You don't understand," I said.
"No, you don't understand," she said, her voice venomously low. "You think that I'll flop into bed automatically with the highest-ranking male aboard, don't you?"
"That's what your mother did, isn't it?" I spat. For a moment I thought she was going to slap me. She drew back and I inadvertently flinched. Instead, she hit harder with her words.
"You're jealous, aren't you? My mother picked Rodriguez over you, and now you're jealous that Fuchs is the top dog in this pack."
"I don't want you to be hurt," I said.
"Worry about yourself, then. I can take care of myself."
With that, she turned on her heel, stepped into her compartment, and slid the folding door shut. She didn't slam it, but it banged into place quite firmly.
"I thought I told you to go to your quarters."
I whirled and saw Fuchs standing just outside the hatch to the bridge, no more than 10 meters away. How long he'd been standing there, I had no way of knowing.
"Now!" he snapped.
Right at that moment, I wanted to leap at his throat and strangle him. Instead, I slunk away toward the crew's quarters, docile like the defenseless runt that I was. Even through my self-absorbed funk, I could sense the tension in the crew's quarters. None of the burly Asians paid the slightest attention to me as I crawled into my bunk and slid the shoji screen shut. They were all huddled around the long table in the middle of the compartment, bending their heads together and muttering to one another in their Asian tongue. I could hear their tone through the flimsy screen. Heavy, dark, foreboding. It didn't sound at all like the jabbering I had heard earlier. I tried to tell myself it was nothing more than my imagination at work, yet I couldn't overcome the feeling that the crew was definitely unhappy. Something was bothering them, and they were talking about it with grim intensity. At least, while I lay there trying to get some sleep, the ship's plunging and lurching smoothed out. "We must be on the night side," I told myself, "or deep enough into the atmosphere for the subsolar wave to have damped out." I fell asleep at last, with the crew's guttural mutterings serving as a rough sort of lullaby. I dreamed, but my memory of it is hazy, something about being weak and sick, and then somehow overcoming it. I think I was sitting up on a dais like my father did at his birthday party. Marguerite was in the dream, I'm pretty sure, although sometimes she was someone else, maybe her mother. Whatever, when I woke, I trudged out to the galley and put together a meal from the selections in the freezer. Then I showered and pulled on a fresh set of coveralls from the storage drawers built in beneath my bunk. Strangely, my old slippers had reappeared. There they were, in the drawer with the underwear. There was precious little privacy in the crew's quarters. I pulled my screen shut when I dressed, but that meant bending and twisting like a contortionist in the narrow space between my bunk and the shoji screen. I thought I'd have several hours to myself before going back on duty, but the ship's intercom speakers put an end to that idea.
"Mr. Humphreys, report to the captain's quarters immediately."
It was Fuchs's voice. He said it only once. He expected me to hear it and obey, which is precisely what I did. Marguerite was there, sitting in one of the chairs in front of his desk. Fuchs was on his feet, hands clasped behind his back, pacing slowly the length of the compartment, chewing on something, those pills of his, I thought.
"Have a seat," he said to me.
I took the chair next to Marguerite.
"We've lost the better part of a day because of the subsolar wave," he said, without preamble. "I propose to make it up by diving below the last cloud deck and making best speed back to the Aphrodite region."
I glanced at Marguerite. She seemed aloof, distant, as if none of this had anything to do with her. Fuchs's bed was still neatly made up, I saw, but I knew that didn't mean much.
"The crew seems unhappy with my decision," he said.
I wasn't surprised that he had sensed the crew's tension. "Do you have the entire ship bugged?" I asked. He whirled on me, fists clenched. I quickly added, "Captain." Fuchs relaxed, but only a little. He went to his desk and touched a key on the phone console. A large section of the bare metal bulkhead turned into a display screen. I saw the crew's quarters from a vantage point up in the ceiling. Several of them still sat huddled around the central table, muttering.
"They are speaking in a Mongol tribal dialect," he said with a disgusted smirk. "They think I can't understand what they are saying."
"Can you?" Marguerite asked.
"I can't, but the language program can."
He jabbed a stubby finger on the keyboard again, and the mumbling guttural voices were overlain by a computer's flat, emotionless translation.
"He is determined to get down to the surface at all costs. He will kill us all. He wants the prize money. $10 billion is an enormous incentive. Not if we are all killed. What can we do? Take the ship and get the hell out of here."
I looked from the screen to Fuchs, still standing with his hands clasped behind his back. His face was as unemotional as the computer's translation.
"But how? He is the captain. We are 12, he is 1. There are the other 2. No problem, 1 woman and 1 weakling."
I felt my face redden.
"The captain is no weakling. And Amar Jagal will not go along with us now that she is first mate. Who else would be against us? Sanja, perhaps. I can convince Sanja to stand with us. But if we take the ship and head back to Earth, we won't get the prize money. To hell with the prize money. My life is more important. You can't spend money when you are dead."
Fuchs clicked off the display and the computer's translation.
"Don't you want to hear more?" Marguerite asked. "The details of what they're planning?"
"It's all being recorded," he said.
"What are you going to do about this, sir?" I asked.
"Nothing."
"Nothing?"
"Not a thing. Not yet. So far, they're just griping. Our little joyride on the wave shook them. If things settle down, if we don't encounter any more scares, they'll forget about it. Their share of the $10 billion overrides a lot of complaints."
Marguerite said slowly,
"But if we run into more trouble..."
Fuchs snorted.
"They'll try to kill us all. After raping you, of course."
Below the clouds.
"Whatever possessed you to hire such a gang of cutthroats?" I demanded. Fuchs gave me a humorless grin.
"They're a good enough crew. All of them learns their trade out in the belt. They're rough and unpolished, but they know how to run this ship and survive."
I said, "And should we run into any more difficulties?"
"Which we will," Marguerite interjected.
"They're going to take over the ship and kill us all," I finished.
Fuchs nodded somberly. He sat heavily in his desk chair and let out a gust of air that would have been a sigh had anyone else breathed it. From him it sounded more like an animal's growl.
"I suppose a little demonstration is in order," he said at last.
"A demonstration, sir?" I asked.